Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So on April 30th, a billionaire philanthropist, that's a nice name for him, Eli Broad died. He was 87 years old. And I got a couple of messages from people who were not all that kind. I'll leave it at that, because Eli Broad, one of the guys who, the Broad Foundation, one of the folks who basically wrote the playbook on how to destroy public education. One of the folks who actually had the playbook on how to close down public schools and, you know, all of the horrible things that then come with it. And, you know, it fostered that conversation on, you know, the people who have the money doing bad things for the rest of us. And you remember yesterday we were talking about the valorization of wealth, how this conservative author was saying, oh, well, no, we care about wealth. We're okay with inequality. We're okay with the bad stuff because we want people to think this is the place where the streets are paved with gold, where somebody can go and make a gazillion dollars. And never mind if you have kids who are starving or veterans who are homeless. We can deal with that little inequality. Just as long as we've got rich people with bad ideas. And here to share some thoughts on rich people with bad ideas, I've asked Thomas Ulican to come talk with us. He's a teacher, blogger. He's got a new piece out, Why Tax Billionaires Out of Existence. I'm not against this. Thomas, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah.
So we're going to be taxing billionaires out of existence. Is that the plan?
Well, you know, you just brought up something that really is really bothering me. So Eli Broad died on April 30th, and he was a nightmare for public education. He spent a lot of nice stuff on arts in L.A., and so a lot of people in L.A. really liked what he did. But the big problem I have now is that large chunk of change, that $9 billion fund is still there, and it's still running, and they're still running the Eli Broad privatized public education playbook. And there's funds like that developing all over the country. In Kansas City, you got the guy that started the Kansas City Royals. His fund is still there. He died in like 68 or 72, something like that. And you know, and that's just all over the place, these large funds of private money that really want to lower taxes on the wealthy and get rid of any paying social services. Any kind of social services are somehow bad. The users are taking the real people's money. And so that really bothered me. I really think we can't have a democracy if we don't tax these billionaires out of existence. We just can't have these huge piles of money all over this country and be a democratic country.
But Thomas, you know, we're told that the great thing about this country is you can come here and you can seek your fortune. You can be wildly wealthy. You can be as immorally wealthy as you can possibly be. And we encourage that because, according to this author, that's one of our core values.
Well, that's his core value, but I think he's absolutely wrong. I don't think that's American. I think that's your basic oligarchy. It has nothing to do with American democracy. It doesn't. It's like Republicans now seem to be anti-democracy. Even it's like, what's going on there? The only I can't believe the only Republican making any sense to me is Liz Cheney.
Exactly. I said at the beginning, I can't believe that I'm depending on a Cheney to save our democracy.
I mean, it's just crazy. And you know what? She's going to be a nightmare in the future because she's going to win.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm. It's going to be interesting to see what happens to her in Wyoming.
I think they took on the wrong person when they take on. She's going to win. She's smart. She's a conservative nightmare. She checks all the boxes off for them. And a lot of those conservatives have really gotten sick of Donald Trump.
We'll see. I mean, I have respect for honest conservatives. I have problems with the ones we have now. My concern with her is...
respect for honest conservatives, but the big problem I have is them being anti-labor, which is basically being anti-common man.
Right. No, and then look, they're trying to spin themselves right now as the party of the working class, and I'm going, show me what you've done.
Well, you've given, tax breaks to the super wealthy so that money can trickle down. And it still hasn't trickled to me, though.
No, I haven't gotten it yet either. I've gotten wet. I've had yellow stuff, leak down on me, but it hasn't been golden honey. But I do want to talk about your piece, though, because, in your piece on the billionaires, you talk about some of the bad ideas that they've come up with, things like Teach for America, which, was touted, by the left and the right as, a great thing. We're getting, young, energetic people to go into those poor neighborhoods and they're going to help.
Well, Mercedes Snyder had it just about right. I think it was 2010, the Walton family dumped $50 million into Teach for America. And basically what Mercedes Snyder says is that, what's her name, the founder of Teach for America, said, Wendy Kopp, said, I have a bunch of young, idealistic, mostly Ivy League graduates for sale, and corporate America showed up to buy. And, it is just a complete baloney. They've got this idea that anybody graduates from college, you can send them to a five-week training course and they can be a teacher. Well, Teach for America teachers are terrible. They're lost. They're walking into classrooms completely unprepared. Maybe one out of 10 or 12 of them just is a natural ability to lead a class, but that's very unusual. Everything I'm hearing, and you look at the data where you take, there's this partnership for L.A. where Marshall Tuck was running it, and he brought in all kinds of Teach for America people into these partnership for L.A. schools. Well, guess what? Their test scores didn't go up, even though they were given lots of resources, because they had terrible teachers. They have teachers that were unprepared. There's very few places like that where we really get to see it, but it's just common sense. A real teacher has a college degree and a year of classes in education and a year of training underneath a master teacher before he goes into the classroom. Teach for America's kids, no college, no education classes, and no year of training, no experience other than a five-week summer school course. They're just completely unprepared.
But, the argument is, well, they're going into schools that are failing, and we're trying. We're trying, Thomas. We're trying the best we can. These schools are failing without us.
Well, the other thing is this failing notion is just so ridiculous. It's based on these completely useless standardized testing. There is a pile of articles out there right now written by educators all over the United States. I mean, it's just overwhelming about how useless standardized testing is and how destructive standards are. Nobody's listening to the educators. It's people like the late Eli Broad that they listen to, or Alice Walton, or Reed Hastings from Netflix. That's who gets listened to.
That's because they're rich. And again, I go back to where I started with this idea of the valorization of wealth, that they're somehow better, the wealthy are somehow smarter, that they know what to do. Because it's what we were told, weren't we? We give the rich people all the money, they know what to do with it, and they'll take care of the rest of us. We're doing the same thing with education. They figured out how to make a widget or whatever, so they must know something, so they can fix these problems with all of their bad ideas.
Well, and look, like one of the biggest nightmares for education is Lorini Jobs Powell, or Lorini Powell Jobs. Lorini Powell, she married Steve Jobs. That's what qualifies her to lead education now. So now she's got $30 billion. What smart things did she do besides marry sweet Steve Jobs?
That's a good question. You can say the same thing about Betsy DeVos. Why is she running education when she comes from being an Amway saleswoman?
She wasn't even a salesman. She married a salesman.
That's true. But here again, it comes back to this frame that somehow the wealthy are smarter, better, that they'll take care of us. They know what we need, And they don't, clearly. I mean, you go through bad idea after bad idea, you know, and the reality is we know what we need. We need smaller class sizes. We need better trained teachers. We need to eradicate poverty. It would be great. Take some of that money from the billionaires, move it down to the bottom of the economic scale, bring those kids up and those families up, make sure they've got food and clothing and secure shelter and all of those things. And parents have jobs and health care. Make sure we do those things. That's how you get kids to learn better.
Yeah, this what's going on? The other thing that really bothers me, and you mentioned this just a little bit ago, is that people on the left were lining up behind Teach for America. Well, those weren't people on the left; those were neoliberals. That was the Hillary Clinton, Bubba Clinton. You know that whole group, Gore. Those neoliberals, they are basically 50s Republicans.
Yeah, I mean, you even had Obama say he'd have been an Eisenhower Republican.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm really surprised at how liberal Biden has turned out to be, because he's looking like he's going to turn his back on public education, but at least he's trying to do something for children.
You not a fan of Cardonia?
Oh, well, no. I mean, this is a guy that trained in one of the billionaire organizations, so-called fellowships. Then he goes right from that fellowship to be head of education in Connecticut. Now he's secretary of education. But I'm not so much bothered by him as the little people that they're putting in the lower levels. They keep bringing Obama people back and people that, were like authors of No Child Left Behind and people that were running race to the top. I mean, this is some real awful people have been put in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, Arne Duncan's not back, is he?
No, but his friends are. And his lieutenants, several of them, are back.
Well, that is not a good thing. So the question then becomes, you've got another piece out on why you support public education. You know, why should we support public education? Because we're told it's failing. All of the messaging that's going on, the billionaires want us to know our local public schools are not doing well. Why do we support it?
Well, and there's a real problem here, because public education is the foundation of democracy in America, and it's also the and it's where school boards run the schools and local citizens have input into their schools. Well, they've federalized this in the last 20 years, and they've turned it into a real difficult situation for public schools. I just can't believe that what's going on. It's like if we lose our public school system, we will lose our democracy.
Well, I would argue we're close to losing all of it anyway, and a lot of those people on January 6th were educated in public schools. That would be the argument back, wouldn't it?
No, the people on January 6th were propagandized by the reality TV star that used to be in the White House, and they actually believed that he was. I don't know where they were educated, but. They have bought into this major lie that this guy won the presidency. They really feel like the guy they were supporting won the presidency, and it's their patriotic duty just to right this wrong. And we've never had a president who didn't follow the American Constitution for a peaceful transfer of power before. And this guy's a nightmare.
Yeah, now it looks like he's going to run in 2024, so we may get him again.
Well. The 2022 elections are going to be really interesting, because I just can't believe this stuff is going to play. I just think more and more people, people in Eastern Oregon are waking up now going, oh, wow, we're being locked down again because we have the highest coronavirus rate on the West Coast. because they voted 80% for Trump. Well, they got to start connecting the dots sooner or later.
That is the hope. If you want to check out the work by our good friend Thomas Ulican, we can get links out why he supports a public education and why tax billionaires out of existence. I can think of a million reasons, but public education is right up there at the top. We'll make sure we get links out on how you can check out Thomas's work. As always, Thomas, I appreciate you taking some time for us, sharing your thoughts and your writings.
Thanks a lot, Rick. It's been a pleasure.
Good stuff. Appreciate your time. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1886. That was the day Wisconsin State Militia shot down workers striking for the 8-hour day in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, killing 7. It's known as the Bayview Massacre. As cities across America erupted into strikes for the 8-hour day, municipal workers in Milwaukee had already won shorter working hours. Many private employers had followed suit. The Central Labor Union and the Knights of Labor mobilized thousands in the campaign to bring the rest of the city's employers into line. Building tradesmen joined Polish, German, and Native American laborers in strikes and marches across the city for nearly a week. They marched to area factories, calling out to workers to join the strike. By May 3rd, every factory in town was shut down except for the Milwaukee Iron Company rolling mill in Bayview. Workers marched to the mills and demanded workers join them. At this point, Governor Rusk called out the militia. They formed a line just inside the gate to prevent strikers from reaching mill workers. As the events of Haymarket unfolded in Chicago that evening, area businessmen became increasingly fearful of upheaval brewing in the city. Governor Rusk gave the shoot-to-kill order should any striker attempt to enter the mills. The next morning, as 1,500 strikers marched toward the mill, they were fired upon by militia. 7 were killed, many more injured. Strikes for the 8-hour day ended abruptly. Many union leaders were indicted, and Polish workers were practically blacklisted from working in the city for their radicalism. Though the massacres shattered hopes for the 8-hour day, Milwaukeeans responded by electing populists and socialists in local and regional elections for years to come. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So it looks like the former guy is looking at 2024, and I agree with Thomas. You look, 2022 is going to be an interesting year. And I've been saying, look, if Biden's able to get a big, chunky, healthy infrastructure bill through, if we're able to get some actual stuff done, that's going to be helpful. It's going to help the Democrats in 2022 because people's lives are going to get better. And that's what we need. We need to move policy. We need to move in the right direction. Need to do the right things. Make people's lives better. And then they won't pine for whatever bizarre rhetoric is coming out from the former guy. The other news today, evidently Facebook's oversight board, they have ruled that, I guess, an indefinite suspension of Trump's Facebook page is not permissible for Facebook. That somewhere down the road, maybe, possibly, he's going to get his account back. They wrote quite the quote that it's not appropriate for Facebook to indefinitely suspend Trump because it's not permissible for Facebook to keep users off the platform for an undefined period with no criteria for when or whether the account will be restored. They're reexamining the arbitrary penalty it imposed on Trump. They're going to look at it within 6 months. In the meantime, Trump has got a new blog. Evidently, it's he's discovered how to have a blog. It's going to be from the desk of Donald J. Trump, of which I will not talk about outside of now. Don't care what the former guy has to say. because ultimately, for me, it comes down to he's responsible for January 6th. And this is the reason we absolutely need a bipartisan, a nonpartisan investigation to get to the bottom of who was responsible and hold accountable those responsible. But here's the thing. You're going to have crazy people saying crazy stuff. I was never thrilled with the idea of banning Trump from Twitter or social media. I understand it. It's a private platform. They're able to do what they want to do because it's theirs. It is not the public domain. So this idea that somehow it's free speech is ludicrous. Your free speech rights begin and end with what you say to your government. You do not have free speech rights with me or anybody else. You don't get to say whatever you want, especially if you come into my house, we will then have problems. I'm someone who believes in more speech, not less. If I don't like what you say, I will respond. And the mass of us should be educated, intelligent enough to know BS when we see it. Past generations figured it out. I think of my grandfather. My grandfather had an 8th grade education. He was smart enough to be able, he had an incredible BS detector. You couldn't get anything by him. He was a street smart guy. We got a lot of really educated people who believe a lot of dumb stuff. So just because you've got a degree hanging on the wall doesn't mean you're all that bright. Especially if you listen to some of the stuff coming from the Republicans today on, you know, they stole the election. 60 court decisions say you're wrong. And even today on Parler, because Parler was partially up for a touch, they had a couple hours where they were workable, but that didn't stop the Woods official. I don't know who the Woods official is, and this is why I hate a lot of this social media stuff, because you get people who hide behind stupid names. But the Woods official, and he's verified. And I don't know how you verify, you know, something like this, but okay. He parlored out when the real conservatives take back the House and the Senate and the White House, every single one of those individuals that have committed treason, Republican, Democrat, Independent, Supreme Court justices will hang for their treasonous acts. Being nice is over. We are at war with the world. And our own government. Clearly someone with a mental disorder. Now, do I think he should be allowed to say that? Yeah, I do. But I think the sane and rational among us should be dealing with this guy and watching him very closely, especially local law enforcement. Clearly somebody who's off the beaten path. Now, should he have the right to say that? I don't. Look, say dumb stuff. I know people who say dumb stuff all the time. Sometimes I say dumb stuff. We have a right to say dumb stuff. But we don't have a right to threaten people. And this is kind of on that line where you go, is this the right thing to say in a decent society? Now, look, I think he should have the right to say it. But I think we, as readers and consumers of this garbage, should turn them away. No one should be following it, retweeting it. It comes back to us. And look, you know, if you're the federal government, I think you got to be worried about someone like this. Because somehow this guy believes that he's a real conservative, and I don't know what that is anymore. Is he on the side of Liz Cheney, who's saying, no, we shouldn't cover up what happened on January 6th? And no, I'm not going to lie about the nonsense going on? Or is he going to stop the steal because we know the former guy told us? It's insane. Also, a federal judge, he has ordered the release of a Justice Department memo. This Justice Department memo is supportive of the former Attorney General Billy Barr. The conclusion that Trump shouldn't be should not be prosecuted over the Mueller report, the obstruction of justice that went into that, and all of the things that they did to roadblock the Mueller report. This is kind of interesting to me, because Billy Barr gave them the ability to walk out of the White House without any consequences for their actions. Someone who was impeached twice. And still, the Republicans let him walk. I want to know why. I want them to go back and look at that Mueller report again. I want somebody to hold that administration accountable. Now, I'm not one of these people who go, oh, no, we're going to go back, and every administration's going to go back after the last one. No, the last one was really unique. And in the coming decades, we're going to find the level of criminal activity just through the roof. Now, again, these are the people that Liz Cheney said believe in the rule of law, who have been standing around making sure that, well, the criminal that was there before gets to walk away. And worse yet, might run in 2024 and might win. Let that sink in. I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, our good friend Bob Ney is going to be here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day right back after this.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
There is simply no reason why the blades for wind turbines can't be built in Pittsburgh instead of Beijing.
Biden makes history with climate-focused congressional address.
Drilling also releases another potent greenhouse gas, methane.
New report finds reduction of methane crucial for climate. Plus, Washington State passes landmark cap-and-trade law.
All of those stories and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
He wants control of your life. He's going to control how much meat you can eat. Can you imagine that?
No, I can't imagine that, because it's not true, because you're making it up, Kevin McCarthy, and you know you're making it up because it's been debunked days ago, yet you keep saying it. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, you have been delighted for days about this since Biden's address. It was historic, particularly from a climate perspective.
Indeed it was. President Joe Biden's address to a joint session of Congress on his 99th day in office late last week was historic. For the first time, man-made climate change was woven throughout a State of the Union or equivalent speech as a core part of economic policy, foreign policy, and job creation.
Biden lover.
Biden's climate policies depend heavily on Congress passing his $2 trillion American Jobs Plan proposal to rebuild the nation's crumbling infrastructure and shift to clean energy. He characterized it as crucial to stay competitive with China, which is investing twice as much as the U.S. in clean technology. And he pitched it to union members, a key voting bloc, name-checking the IBEW union, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers.
American Jobs Plan will put engineers and construction workers to work building more energy-efficient buildings and homes. Electrical workers, IBEW members, installing 500,000 charging stations along our highways so we can own the electric car market.
Biden's joint address to Congress could mark a turning point for the U.S. and the world if his climate policies are translated into broad action.
Oh, that's a big if.
Indeed it is. On Monday, Republican Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell surprised no one in announcing that no Republicans will vote for Biden's jobs plan, no matter what is in it, making West Virginia's conservative Democratic Senator Joe Manchin an incredibly powerful figure determining the course of future U.S. climate action.
Long may he reign.
Meanwhile, the Transportation Department is moving forward, announcing the administration will jumpstart construction of new interstate electric transmission lines to distribute clean energy across the country, avoiding delays and disputes by siting lines along existing federal rights of ways and highways.
Do you need special electric lines to transmit clean energy versus regular old dirty energy?
Yes, you do, because high voltage transmission lines are way better at carrying energy over really, really long distances.
Huh. Who knew?
A new report by the American Council on Renewable Energy has identified 22 shovel-ready grid transmission projects across the country that they say would increase wind and solar generation by 50% in the U.S. and create 1.2 million jobs. In other news, Senate Democrats late last week voted to reinstate Obama-era regulations limiting methane emissions from the oil and gas industry using the Congressional Review Act, which allows Congress a short window to rescind regulations passed by a previous administration.
Well, that's about time, Democrats.
Yes, and it matters, because methane, the principal component in natural gas, is a more potent climate-warming gas than carbon dioxide on shorter timescales, and the oil and gas industry is a primary source. The New York Times reports that a new draft study by the United Nations warns that slashing methane emissions is far more important to slowing man-made global warming than previously thought, and plugging fossil fuel industry leaks has the biggest potential to slow emissions both efficiently and cheaply.
And that is a huge part of the Biden American Jobs Plan.
Exactly. Moving swiftly to cut human-caused methane emissions from the most polluting industries, fossil fuels, landfills, and agriculture could slow the rate of global warming almost immediately by as much as 30%, buying us some time, and overall would avoid about a third of a degree Celsius of global warming by the 2040s.
It is maddening that these old drilling platforms are leaking methane. They're not even giving us oil or gas. They're just making the climate worse.
And on public lands, they're actually wasting the public's natural gas when they flare it into the atmosphere.
Ah, yeah, there's that too.
And finally, Washington State's Democratic majority state legislature finally passed a bill to establish a cap and trade system to cut the state's carbon emissions. It'll be the second state after California to do so. The system requires polluters to pay for their carbon pollution and will launch in 2023.
Make them pay. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, South Carolina in the news. Not for a good reason. Not that they're ever in the news for a good reason, but today the House there in South Carolina voted to add firing squad to the state's execution method. Evidently, they claim there's a lack of lethal drugs that they can use to kill people. So now, if they don't have the needle, you can choose. They're gonna let you choose. Do you want to be shot, or do you want to be electrocuted? And I'm surprised they didn't bring back hang, drawn, and quartered, or you know, some other thing that we could, I'm not going there. Not gonna do it. I'm gonna stop right there. But yeah, evidently we're now going to start shooting people again, or we're going to start shooting people more. Evidently, South Carolina last executed a death row inmate 10 years ago tomorrow. It's the drugs, man. It's the drugs. Here to share some thoughts on, well, do you want to go by firing squad? I've asked our good friend, former Ohio Congressman Bob Ney, to come talk with us. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, thank you, Rick.
So would you choose firing squad?
No, I mean, well, of course, if you give me option of electrocution or firing squad, then I'd have to take electrocution, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I want to be.
What if they miss?
Exactly. You know? What if they hit all non-vital organs? You got shot 12 times.
I thought about that.
Although there's a chance you might survive.
Mm-hmm.
If you get shot 12 times and you survive, do you get to go free?
I assume you do. I assume.
Well, I guess they'd have to
make that deal with you. You know, it brings a point about the the tiny history here. We had a vote in Ohio years ago to allow different types of execution, and one of the reasons that people defeated it was because if you make that kind of change, at least in Ohio at the time, you then put in jeopardy the actual death penalty itself to be reheard constitutionally.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so I was shocked at this story because if you introduce, because it passed in the House and Senate there, if you introduce, and this is just a history from Ohio, which has to be about the same legally to challenge in South Carolina, if you introduce a new method, it then allows for the death penalty itself to be instituted as a debate before the Supreme Court of your state.
Yeah, to be relitigated. Interesting.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see if that happens. As long as they're giving out choices, if I get to choose, can I just live a long life on a deserted island?
Right.
How about that? Or exactly. Dropped out of a plane? I think I might go drop it out of a plane.
Right. Well, of course, you haven't had prison food either. I'm speaking from personal experience.
Yeah. No.
Might want to be executed.
I actually have had it once.
Oh, okay.
When I was in college, we went to Moundsville Penitentiary.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was a field trip.
That's 8 miles from where I lived.
Yeah. We went there for one day.
Okay.
There was a skirmish. Something went on. They ushered us out. But we did get to eat the bad food, and I still remember it. It's still there in the back of my head.
There you go.
Let's move on. Some good news. The Biden administration says they're supportive of lifting the patent protections to get vaccines around the world. Thoughts?
Right. This is, of course, it has a lot of praise that's going to be heaped upon it because it's going to definitely help. No question about it. Now, also, obviously, there's going to be a big dispute from the drug manufacturers, which I don't think most people will care about. But he's going to waive the vaccine patents. And it's going to be done for the purposes of speed. It's necessary if you want to, get with the program, save lives. They've also mentioned in one of the articles about restoring our position on the global stage, which, I kind of argue that we're not going to particularly beat China or Russia. They've been ahead of us and, providing support to other countries, but it's the right thing to do this, no matter, whether it puts us up in the global stage, number one, or it doesn't. It's still the right thing to do. Everybody's in this boat together.
Yeah, ultimately, though, isn't it going to help us in the long run anyhow? The quicker we get rid of it, the quicker we get it under control, maybe the quicker we get to go back to some bit of sanity?
Oh, absolutely. It's going to help. It's just that when some of the media articles touted it, that, it's going to make us number one in diplomacy, no, usually we don't get credit for things, So I think if people are looking at that aspect that we need to do this because it makes us number one, that's not the reason to do it. The reason to do it is because it's going to help us. It's going to help the world. It's going to help, everybody when it comes to this pandemic.
Yeah, I see it the other way. Not that it's going to make us number one. It's not going to make us look like a-holes.
Well, true. Well, it's true.
One of the things, you're not sharing, you're greedy, you're America.
Right. Right. I just think that, people have touted this, that, it's going to put us ahead of Russia and China, and it's not, but that's okay. That's all right.
Yeah. Did you see the 60 Minutes bit, over the weekend with Lloyd Blinken and the chips commentary that they had going on about the fact that we don't make anything anymore?
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah, I mean, they had Intel, the guy from chairman, the CEO of Intel on, and he's talking about how, we used to make, a lot of computer chips here, a lot of the semiconductor stuff, almost 40% of the world's chips we used to make. Now we're down under 12%, And the reason that the auto industry is freaking out is they can't get the chips that they need. And the reason a lot of industries are freaking out is because Asia is where all of this stuff now is produced. Because guess what? Because of our idiotic trade deals and greedy CEOs, we've given away all of our manufacturing base. And guess what? We're now dependent on that part of the world for a couple of, you know, a couple of things like personal protective gear, basically, basically all of our manufactured goods. And then you had Blinken come out and say, China's being more repressive at home and much more bellicose. And I forget the exact word that he used, but much more outwardly bellicose to the rest of us. And yeah, they're feeling their oats.
You know, I didn't see it, but you know, it's what we've been saying way back since 1995, and after that, it's slowly going to get us, and it did. In fact, it wasn't even as slow as we thought it was. It was rapidly. And I think the pandemic brought to mind that the supply chain is controlled, and it's not controlled by us.
Yep.
And if you look at when we sounded the warning alarm, and I say we because I was part of a coalition of, you know, we can throw the names out there, Dennis Kucinich, Bernie Sanders, Steve LaTourette of Ohio. I mean, I could go down a list of about 80 people that constantly warned about this in the mid-90s. And then, of course, permanent trade status came. I call it the unholy Gingrich-Clinton deal. And that was it. China got what it wanted, and from that point accelerated everything forward. And then, of course, a lot of people said, well, you know, they're cheaper products. Well, they were cheaper products till they put us out of business. Then they raised the prices on us. It's exactly how it works. And so I didn't see the article, I mean the show, but obviously I'm pretty sympathetic to the fact that, you know, we've got to take back the manufacturing base. And I think the pandemic proves it more than we've seen it in years.
Yeah, and this is where, you know, Secretary of State Anthony Blinken was there on 60 Minutes, and he said China's acting more repressively at home and more aggressively abroad were his exact words. And he was pointing out, look, you know, you've got the warships patrolling the South China Sea, you've got jets flying over the Pacific Ocean, you've got, you know, all this stuff going on that they're flexing their muscle because we're a little bit weakened. And my position has been, on this infrastructure plan, that we don't seem to do anything in this country unless national security or defense is part of the picture. So it's my view that maybe I think the administration should be touting this as a national defense bill more than an infrastructure bill, because we need broadband access badly. We need to be the leader in 5G, and right now we are not. We need to rebuild our infrastructure, our power grids, our waterways, all of that stuff that's computerized and being hacked constantly. This, to me, is a national security bill more than it's anything else, and we shouldn't have to beg for it and beg Joe Manchin and some Republicans to give us half of what we need. We should take it from the defense budget.
Right. I mean, it is a defensive part. I mean, it's very important to our defense as a country. It's just like the, well, they call it the dirty earth materials. And there were companies out there being put together, some even run as nonprofits, that were begging the government a few years ago for help, and they went away. And this is the material that's used in everything we have, washers and dryers and cell phones, et cetera. And, of course, you know who has really made that industry go forward? China.
And, you know, it's one of these things, you know, where people, well, they just made, they did better. No, we gave it away. We had greedy CEOs who only cared about lining their pockets and that of the investor class, and the wealth class did this to this country. And I don't know why people aren't screaming that on every street corner. Every one of these CEOs made this decision, and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce was the conduit, the pipeline to move jobs from this country to that country. We gave away the most powerful, most productive manufacturing base in the history of civilization so that they could get a little bit richer.
Well, it's true, and it used to make me sick to my stomachs. I used to reel back hard at them publicly in press conferences we would do when I would hear this, we've got to be more productive. Okay, you take an American worker and you put he or she against a Chinese worker who's making 15 cents an hour, works 28 days a month. That's slave labor. We can't be more, quote, productive I mean, we did quite well, again, going against slave labor.
Yep.
So it wasn't a level playing field. And, they would say that all the time, the CEOs. And then Lucent Technologies is the one that stands out best in my mind. They came into my office, and I remember the guy that represented them, and he said, you know, Bob, just think if every Chinese buys one of our phones, and just think how many people be employed in America. Well, he wasn't employed soon after the permanent trade status, because guess what? Lucent dropped everything.
No. Look, you brought up Lucent Technologies. I remember a guy, you know, I used to see every morning. He had the world by the short hairs. He worked for Lucent. I had the big Cadillac, the big giant boat. Was telling me how much money he had in his 401k. He had the world by the short hairs. And then I didn't see him for a while. And then like 6-8 months later, I run into him at a diner. He's all disheveled. He's a broken man, because they basically stripped it all from him.
Sure.
And just like that. And it was tragic. And, but you know, almost kind of like poetic justice, because you know, this was a guy who, you know, he was touting that same kind of line. You know, when we start making all that stuff, it's going to be great. And I hear the same thing about the auto industry. You know, I talked yesterday about, you know, the UAW wants the electric vehicles to be made here in the U.S. And someone said, well, you know, China's going to buy a lot of electrical vehicles too. I go, yeah, I'm not against them producing domestic production for domestic consumption. But the idea that they're going to produce and ship here is not good for us.
Right. The logic on this was mind-boggling.
Yep.
I remember Congressman David Dreyer of California. He would come to me and he would say, but don't you know, Bob, Boeing really needs this trade bill because Boeing's hurting. And then there would be a trade bill, and then Boeing hurt, and then there'd be a trade bill, and Boeing hurt. And I said, don't you realize, David, one day you'll realize in your mind, this is what's killing our companies.
Yep.
They don't need another trade bill. It's killing them.
No, I hope we don't get another horrible one. Just nuts. Lastly, I got to get your thought on the Liz Cheney McCarthy thing. This is kind of remarkable. I mean, this is like soap opera TV right in front of us. You've got the party that seems, your former party that seems to be insane on one side, and well, I never thought I was going to say it, but there could be a Cheney that saves our democracy.
Well, you know, this is a very fascinating public political battle that hasn't occurred in House leadership in a long, long time. In one hand, I can understand if Cheney or any other member, now she happens to be a Cheney, but if any other member is not within their party's, you know, loyalty test, quote, and they want to be in leadership, okay, I can understand where that causes a problem. This isn't that standard thought, because I can see where either party would say, well, wait a minute, you know, you can be a regular member and speak out, but if you want to just go against the leadership all the time, then, you know, we can't have that. In normal context, I think anybody could agree, fine, you know, that's not a good scenario. This is a little bit different context, because she's going, you know, out after Trump, and she's bringing up issues now. That's not just her opinion, but it's substantive issues. For example, how they're going to proceed on looking at January the 6th. McCarthy, the minority leader, as you know, Rick, he wants to go into other things that have happened around the country. Well, this commission looks at January the 6th. January the 6th didn't happen in the Pennsylvania or Ohio state capitals. It happened in the U.S. Capitol. And so that's where her opinion then all of a sudden, quote, became, you know, juxtaposed to the Republican side, and I'm not sure that's really true. I think she's trying to save them from themselves.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems that, you know, the idea that you're not going to, and you know, she's not going to come on board with that the election was stolen, it was rigged, and the nonsense that's going on in Arizona is just mind-blowing. I guess they're looking for bamboo in the ballots now. I guess that's something they're testing for, I've read. It's crazy.
Now, I did think it was a pretty smart move, though, when they brought in New York, the New York rep, because bringing her in is very, very fascinating, and that's Elise Stefanik, because she's got an interesting history where she went against the Republicans on several major things, yet, of course, she defended Trump. But it's still interesting that they picked one of the more liberal Republican members, and that's so they can say, well, wait a minute, we're not against people who have opposed us. We're just against Liz Cheney. And that's the purpose of putting Stefanik in there.
And that explains why, you know, in Cheney's op-ed, you know, she had to get her she had to go through why she's, you know, this ultra-conservative, and she believes in their values, and tried to lay that out. And also took shots at Biden and, you know, how bad the Democrats were.
Right.
That explains a lot of the op-ed then.
Right, right. And she's trying to, you know, of course, hold on to some things. Stefanik is playing on the fact that, you know, she is a liberal Republican, but she was, quote, supportive of Trump in the end when it came to the, you know, the impeachment. So it's just it's a move versus them replacing Cheney with somebody who is to the right of Cheney.
Now, does she go?
Yes. She will not survive. She survived last time because she had McCarthy, the minority leader, on her side. But now she has McCarthy and Scalise, who's one of the four leaders, the big four, as they call them. She's going to go. She will not survive this. It doesn't matter that you know, her name is Cheney. It doesn't matter what repercussion this will have in effect. She will not survive this one.
That's it. The dad's coming out with the shotgun.
That's it. Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah, just don't go hunting with him. Right.
Someone's getting shot in the face again.
I forgot about that.
So does this, you know, because I have people saying that this is going to, when they oust her, this is going to give her credibility. This is going to rise her profile. How do you see this playing out? Does it raise her profile, or does she get hammered at home in Wyoming?
Yeah, she gets hammered at home, I think, in Wyoming, because one thing you have to watch is once you lose a power base, she could survive. She has to make sure she's extremely effective back home, you know, touching base, make sure that she tries to do things that are, you know, effective for her state. Otherwise, it'll be just, well, she's lost power, she can't help us, and somebody will challenge her that, you know, she's not doing anything for her home state. She let personal politics get in the way of it, blah, 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 and then they'll run on that basis. I don't see where this will enhance her, although she is in a unique situation because of her last name.
Yeah. And her only supporter seems to be Mitt Romney.
Right. Well, yes, that's it.
We'll see how this plays out. But as always, Bob, I appreciate the time and the thoughts. As always, good stuff.
Thank you, Rick.
Good stuff, our good friend Bob Ney. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this soap opera plays itself out. We need something, right? You don't have the former guy to kick around anymore. And the Biden administration has been boring. No scandals. I mean, the picture with the Carters, yeah, that was a little scandalous. How big they looked using that wide-angle lens. How dare they? And then today, the tacos. You know, scandal. It's crazy. It is what it is. Speaking of scandal, we will be taking the next 2 days off. I am going for my second Moderna shot, I'm told. Hoping people are wrong. I'm told not going to be feeling well for a little while. Probably best just to take a little time, rest, relax. Doing it for the good of the country, taking one for the team. So going to go get the second Moderna shot. Not that it matters, but I'm told the Moderna one. That's the one that gives you the sniffles, the fever, the chills, the shakes, whatever else comes with it. And then, you know, after a little time, you're better. And then I'll be vaccinated and I'll be happy. Because then we'll get somewhere near to sane. One of the good things that of getting the Moderna is they're saying, experts are saying, that this one's a little bit more, a little better, a little more protective for the variants. So, hey, for once, maybe I've chosen the right one. Normally when there's a choice, I always make the wrong one. Yes, I bought a Beta machine over a VHS. So, you know, that's been my luck. Finally, maybe the sun will come up tomorrow and I will have made the best choice. I just want to make sure everyone knows the next 2 days we will be away and recovering from the big shot back on my birthday. So everyone can wish me happy birthday on Monday, the 10th. And all of that. Send hate emails. I do enjoy that. Please do. Finally tonight, a federal judge has ruled that the Center for Disease Control and Prevention did overstep their bounds, overstep their legal authority when they issued the national eviction moratorium. Personally, I have no idea why the CDC is involved in this. This should have been done by Congress. This should have happened all along. Evidently, they've gone to court. The federal judge, Dabney Friedrich, he has a 20-page order that basically says the question before the court is very narrow. Does the Public Health Service Act grant the CDC the legal authority to impose a nationwide eviction moratorium? He says it does not. Now, this case brought by the Koch Brothers Pacific Legal Foundation, the moneyed interests out there pushing this, because hey, we need people maskless and kicked out of their homes. According to the census, 1 out of 7 renters are behind on payments. This could be, you know, just catastrophic for families. I'm hoping the Biden administration, and I'm hoping Democrats get their heads in the right direction, and we help the people who need the housing, and also the people who are renting to them. I mean, it's unfair that the landlords aren't being paid, but we can't just be kicking people out of their homes because this happened. We need to make it through. And I think there should be a way to help the landlords make their payments without making a huge profit, so that they make it through this and everybody gets through. But that's the rub, isn't it? Our investor class, they need their profit. Anyway, if you missed any of today's program, TheRickSmithShow.com. That's where you go to get the podcast, The Rick Smith Show app on the smartphone. Take the program on the go wherever you go. And as always, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's tough being rich. For one thing, you have to be on constant alert to keep commoners from encroaching on your turf and upsetting your sense of proper social order. Consider the angst of the swells who summer in the Hamptons, an ultra-tony seaside enclave of New York City's old wealth families and Wall Street elites on the eastern tip of Long Island. For generations, they've used local ordinances to keep us riffraff out of their exclusive communities. But now, they find themselves besieged by, believe it or not, Indians. The small reservation of some 1,600 members of the Shinnecock Indian Nation has also been there for generations. In fact, it's the rich white residents who are the invaders, for their Anglo predecessors first descended on Shinnecock lands in 1640. Today, the indigenous people struggle with poverty, gazing across a small bay at the huge summer mansions of their Gatsby-esque invaders. But now, to lift their own economy, the tribe intends to build a modest tribal-run casino on their reservation. Oh, the horror! Shrieked the Hamptonites. Yet, the reservation is the Shinnecock people's sovereign land, free from the Hampton elite's zoning laws. So the rich and mighty are reduced to begging the native people to just go away. A lot of us are bleeding-heart liberals and sympathetic to the oppressed, exclaimed one, but it's not the right location. It never is it? But casino revenue could help tribal families with such expenses as rent, food, utilities, and car payments. It could change the quality of life here overnight, says the tribal chief. But who cares? A few of the snobbiest of Hampton Blue Bloods haughtily warn they will move out if the Shinnecock Casino comes in. This is Jim Hightower saying, sounds like a good trade to me. The Hightower Radio Lowdown is brought to you by the Lowdown Happy Hour, live streamed from the Chat and Chew Cafe. Details at HightowerLowdown.org.